And we're back. What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Extreme Drummers Podcast. It's been about, what, 9 months? 8 months? I do apologize. It's been so long. I really didn't mean for it to be that long. Life got kind of busy over those few months, and this just kind of fell to the back of the queue. So I do apologize, but we are back now with a vengeance. I keep saying we. Why am I saying we? It's me. It's just me. No one else. So welcome back. Thanks so much for anyone who has held out this long and is listening now. It's a long time to wait. I'm going to try and make it so it's not that long between this one and the next one. Obviously, I'd like to keep it weekly, but the issue is life's relatively busy. Obviously, I have to do this outside of all the other stuff I have to do because I'm not making any money from this. So it's a complete passion project. So I'm going to try and make it weekly. But if I can't do it weekly, I'm just going to release them as much as and as frequently as I can. And obviously, if you keep in touch on the social media stuff, my Instagram, Dan Wilding Drum, Facebook, Dan Wilding Drum, or the at Extreme Drummers Podcast Instagram, then anytime there's a new episode or news or whatever, then it'll be on there. But anyway, welcome back. I hope everyone's doing all right. It's been a crazy 8 or 9 months. Carcass released our new album, finally. That's out in the world, which is awesome. It's amazing that it's finally out. And that kind of brings it round to the first guest for this year, who is David Castillo, who is the producer, mixer, engineer extraordinaire from who recorded Torn Arteries with us. So I kind of wanted to get David on to talk about that, to talk about Torn Arteries and that whole process. And we get into a lot of that in the podcast. But I also wanted to speak to someone who wasn't just a drummer. I wanted to speak to someone who's kind of coming at it from a different angle to try and give some kind of, I guess, some cool tips and some advice to drummers who maybe have never recorded or who are about to record now that the world's kind of opening up again. Just stuff that, you know, might be helpful that isn't just purely from a drumming angle that might help some people to get some insight into some different aspects. But yeah, so David is a bit of a legend. The reason I found out about him was because of an album called Dead End Kings by Catatonia, which we don't actually talk about in the podcast, but I have spoken to him about on numerous occasions. One of my favorite albums of all time. Great guy. He's done so much other stuff. Bloodbath, Leprous. Oh God, I can't even remember. Soil Work, I think. But yeah, so loads of stuff. He's a really sick, amazing producer. Lovely guy. We got on really well. Yeah, and I've wanted him on the podcast for a while, so we finally did it. So again, enough rambling. Thanks so much to anyone who's still listening, and thanks for waiting around. And I really hope you enjoy it. And this, this is the start of a whole bunch more, fingers crossed, Extreme Drummers Podcasts. So thank you so much. Oh, and in celebration of the podcast coming back, hopefully in full swing, we've got a few, again, I keep saying we, it's just me. I've got a few t-shirts left over from the ones that I printed last year, so I just want to get rid of those, start fresh. So I'm doing them super cheap over on the website, so extremedrummerspodcast.com, go check it out if you want a t-shirt, help support the podcast, help this thing going even longer, then go pick one up, super cheap. And otherwise, keep posted on all the normal places for more news for the next episodes. And sweet, let's get back into it. Thanks for sticking around. Thanks for listening. And I hope you enjoy this episode. Keep in touch on all the normal places and see you again soon. Cheers. For agreeing to chat to me today and to have a catch up. I wanted to have a catch up. I also wanted to kind of get some. This is the first podcast I've done in like 8 months or 9 months.
All right.
Because I did like the whole, I don't know if you saw, but I did a whole, like, I think I did 10 episodes initially. And then I got my garage converted.
Yeah.
And I just stopped because life got really busy. And I was like, fuck, I need to do that again. But in the back of my mind, I was like, David, I really want to talk to David for various reasons. But one of the reasons was obviously because of torn arteries, and just kind of your, because we've got our perspective of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And like obviously me and you met. I mean, I guess we can talk about the wonderful Savage Messiah people.
Yeah.
I love those guys. But yeah, so me and you met, when was that? Was that 2018?
I guess so.
Something around then, 2018, I think. Again, that feels like a million years ago. Feels like we know each other forever.
Yeah, because we started the Torn Arteries 2018, right? The drums we did in like November.
Oh, shit.
I think so.
We did drums in 2018.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That's insane.
I think so. Like October, November.
That makes sense. Yeah, because my youngest was born. And then six weeks after my youngest was born, I came to do drums. So that would have been end of November.
Yeah.
He would have. Yeah, it would have been.
Because I think it was like almost a year or a year from we started recording drums till we finished with the master and everything.
Which I guess is quite a long time. But I guess we didn't do it all in one block. We weren't just like Led Zeppelin. Yeah. Just like. up until that point, you were, well, because that was that whole period when we met, because for anyone who doesn't know.
Probably during the summer, I guess.
Yeah, of 2018, which is crazy. I did a session for a band called Savage Messiah, and we met, and I just kind of fell in love with your studio and just the vibes and stuff. But right, like at that point, it seemed like you were fucking dead in being crazy busy. It seemed like you just had no time off, and everything was insane. And I remember even trying to get Carcass kind of squeezed in was quite quite hard work.
That year was tough because I did the Carcass and Leprous, like Pitfalls album at
course.
The same time.
Yeah, yeah.
So was, yeah. I remember a lot of times was you coming, arriving the same day they left and the other way around, you know, it's, yeah. You need to clean the apartment. Like we have 2 hours before the other band comes in and like, it was just constantly trying to figure out how to make it work.
Yeah. Was that a kind of, was that an unusually busy year, or was that kind of how you were for a few years around that period?
I would say like I'm always busy like that kind of, but the difference that year, I think I didn't mix for a year before I started mixing Torn Arteries, because I was only producing and, you know, recording.
Yeah.
Mainly those two albums, but of course other stuff in between as well.
Mm.
But that was the two big productions that year.
Yeah.
And that's rare. Like when I started mixing, it's like, fuck, I haven't mixed an album for at least a year now. It's strange.
And normally would you be doing tracking and then immediately mixing, or would you be doing more mixing than tracking, or?
Yeah, it's like 50-50. Sometimes I do drum tracking and the bands do like the rest on their own, or and then come back for mixing, or they mix with someone else. You know, it's a little bit like that. And then it's also a lot of stuff just coming in for mixing only. Mm. So it's not that common anymore, which I really prefer doing it all, like production and mixing. I don't know, it's like unless I know I leave it off to a mixer I really think gonna get it somewhere
the right thing.
Exactly, understand the right thing, and also do something different that I wouldn't do with a mix, you know.
Because that must be really weird. It would be like, I don't know, like me only tracking a bit of the drums or something, and then just kind of, I guess that's actually what I did with Savage Messiah. Yeah. Funnily enough, yeah, I recorded half the album and then Ali Richardson recorded the other half. but it must be strange as a, because I guess that's quite exclusive to mixers and engineers, right? That you kind of, not always, but a lot of the time, you're aware that you're probably going to have to give it to someone else to finish, or someone else has done it and you have to finish it off. So there's always like that, oh, I hope they don't fuck it up. Or when you're getting sent something, I hope it doesn't sound like shit because I need to make this sound good.
Yeah, I think I prefer though to get stuff in from other people, even if it's shit. It's like I see it more like I do the best I can with it, and it's for me it's harder to work on something like halfway, or like you do it half of it because you invest so much time and passion into it in some ways, you know. So it's you've done this, you worked on all the songs with drums, and then you're just gonna leave it off to someone else to do all the other stuff because you get so many ideas doing the drums. Of course you have ideas like the guitar should be like this and vocals and everything,
of course,
and then you just, all right, that was it. Now it's it's just the drum.
And then you have to wait, 3 or 4 months to hear if the person they sent it to has completely fucked it up.
Yeah. And you also realize that you do so many decisions, like probably like thousands a day. Like you don't think of it like I choose this snare hit or this vocal line, you know. It's so many things, like change this microphone a little bit. All of those decisions ends up being a big thing in the end when it comes to mixing.
Yeah, of course, of course. And they're things that you clock them when you do them. But then when you send it on to someone else, they don't know all those tiny little adjustments you've made because you know, for whatever reason. Yeah, true. Never thought about that.
So that's why I think it's hard to leave it. It's easier to leave the full production and use someone mixing it than doing like letting someone else do the vocals or all the keyboards or if you do bits and bits, I like probably having control.
Yeah, it makes total sense because, you know, in a lot of ways, and I feel like 100% on Torn Arteries, like we had a vision because it was us three and then it was you, basically. And it was like, because initially we were only just going to come to you for drums. And then I think, because Bill did his guitars in Leeds, the rhythms, right?
Yeah.
And then I think because we all had, well, obviously I wanted it to happen anyway, but they all enjoyed it so much doing the drums that we decided to do the whole thing. And once we had that kind of ball rolling, it felt like a kind of, it was like a group effort, total group effort. And like there were so many things that you brought in that we just never would have thought of, especially like the percussion stuff and like, you know, all the stuff that you did with the keys and all that stuff. It was amazing, man. And it's kind of, do you kind of approach, when you're doing a full production, you know, like tracking and mixing, do you approach it with 100% all the time? Or did we just get kind of the best of you for some reason?
Of course, there's some projects you like more than others, but it's also like, if you know you're gonna do everything, I didn't know that with you guys. I didn't even know.
Yeah, I was
that
pretty confident, but you know Jeff, he doesn't give much away.
But even for mixing, like when we tracked everything, it was not like any signed papers or any written in stone that I should mix the album.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
But still, I think it was like such a fun production, and we had fun. It worked hard, but at the same time, had a lot of fun. And I think that's probably you get the best out of me, I think, when I invest the whole thing into the album, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and that's a lot of people on, like, I think there's a misunderstanding these days about producers, engineers. There's a lot of, I don't know, bands or artists, like, they want to get the producer credit themselves or...
Yeah.
Kind of, and then they hire you as an engineer or whatever. Then I usually tell them, like, I do what as an engineer, I do what the producer tells me to do. Like, I don't have any opinions. Like, this, I think this snare sounds like shit, but
But I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah, exactly. If the producer likes it, I'm just going to mic it the best way I can so he likes it. But but people don't realize that. Like, when they come into the studio, they still think they're going to get the same
level of commitment.
Yeah, exactly. Me having all those opinions, it's not as an engineer. It's two separate professions.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's something that maybe people don't quite realize is such a big distinction, because, you know, there is, as far as I understand it, and as you're explaining it, as far as I can tell, an engineer is essentially the person who presses record, sets up the microphones, makes sure everything's sounding all right. The producer is the person who shapes the entire sound, potentially takes the songs to a different level, has input into so many things across the board, not just sound, but also, like, you know, maybe even restructuring songs, like, you know, the whole kind of, a producer has kind of, you know, overall kind of what's the word, input, whereas an engineer, obviously not making engineers to be lesser, but, you know, it's generally a producer has a much wider input than an engineer, doesn't it? And if they're expecting you to kind of give as much input and kind of enthusiasm, but only as an engineer, then what's the point?
Yeah, exactly. It's like there's an engineer fee and there's a producer fee.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So choose your poison.
Yeah, but I think the most fun and the best albums it's always when you work as a team. For me, it's like being a producer where it's like my way or it's not gonna work. And I think it's all the best albums comes when you work together as a being kind of a group member and or being like the dad for the band, you know, a little bit like
when there are
arguments in a band, you always have like a neutral say that can
I understand both sides.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I get that, man. And it's like, because I noticed this as well, like I've been because I've spoken to many people about you since we recorded, and like I'm not gonna name names, but I've been in situations before where producers/engineers have kind of, they've gone down the kind of tough love approach, and, you know, they've kind of pushed me to try and piss me off to try and get a better take, and I feel like with some people that probably works. You know, there's probably a lot of hyped up drummers who are just like, yeah, fuck you, man, I'm gonna destroy these drums because you piss me off. But I end up just being like, fuck you, man, no, like that's the best I've got, like, yeah. And I just kind of, you know, I put up a wall in those kind of situations. And but with being with you, it was like, it was just, they're so chilled, and there was a few times when you were just like, you could do that better, but it wasn't like, yo, you're shit, what are you doing, you know, trying to roll me up. It was just like, come on, man, you could do that better, like I've heard you do much better, so let's go again. And like, do you do that with everyone, or do you have to find the personalities? Like, is there sometimes where you have to be like, come on, man, you fucking suck, what are you doing? Like, do it better. I mean, I can't imagine you doing that. No, you're so chilled.
I don't think... It's more in an ironic or, like, a fun way. It's not...
I
still think, like, there's producers like Ross Robinson, for example. He's known for...
He's insane, right?
Yeah. And it works for him. Maybe also depending on which kind of bands. Most of the bands, it's like nerds or geeks, you know, playing prog metal or stuff like that. Yeah, it's like,
true.
If you're doing a lot of drugs and coke and everything, you can probably be an ass to each other in a different way, you know. But I think the more relaxed you are, that's my experience, the more relaxed you are, because it's always some much nerves and stress about being in the studio. More you can chill it out and just be relaxed and feel like you're at home, I think you're gonna perform better. Then of course you can tell them, like, you need to hit harder now, now you're being lazy or things like that. But you can say it in a nice way, because just pushing someone down, I think it's, in the end, it's just going to make them play worse. Even if they're angry, it's like, maybe you get the energy out of them, but it's going to be, like, for drums, timing-wise, it's probably not going to be the best.
Or on guitar, the amount of times you've heard it where they strum so hard that everything's out of tune.
Yeah.
Strum it out of tune. So.
For me, it's better just, let's take a break. Have a coffee, do something else for 5-10 minutes, go back in with new energy that usually works. And
Is it, do you find it as well? Do you find like there's a big divide between people that are really nervous and people that are super confident? Have you found people that are, because most people, I assume, are really nervous in the studio.
Yeah,
but someone, I don't really know, so like, because I don't record people. So, but I was, are there people that are like super confident? They just walk in, they're like, "Yeah, cool, sweet, no problems."
Yeah, but usually those are the ones that struggle the most. Like,
really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Like, at least if it's in a cocky way, you know, like I'm gonna nail my guitar solos in one day, and it's like 2 weeks later, you're still doing. Yeah, exactly. It's like, because they were so confident that they were so good that they didn't rehearse, or they haven't played guitar for a month, because they know I can do that in my sleep. But yeah, maybe you can do it in your sleep on stage with your
when you can't really hear it,
yeah,
and
exactly,
like all the notes are kind of muddled up, but yeah, exactly.
Or in your bedroom with your like super distorted guitar tone or whatever, and then you come into the studio, it's a total different story. And you see the stress when they realize themselves, like, fuck, I'm not at the level
I'm not
thought.
As good as I thought I was.
And
oh man,
I think
that's a hard pill to swallow.
Yeah, that's the hardest. And just being nervous, I think it's usually it calms down like after the first day.
Yeah. And I was gonna say, have you ever had anyone that's kind of, you don't have to name anyone, but anyone who's like so nervous that it's been hard, like really hard?
Yeah, and those people, most of the times you realize that pretty early, like just entering the studio, that they're so hyped, or like you feel the energy from them pretty quick.
Like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh
yeah.
shit.
So then you just be very nice with them and
give
them their time. And usually also that's why I don't want to kind of record so much the first day, like more setting up sound and doing all that stuff, and the drummer can get used to the environment or the musician overall, you know, and calm down a bit and know the persons and all that. And then day two, they get good night's sleep instead of like start drumming in the evening when they're tired. And probably, especially when you have so much like loaded up, that going into the studio or so, and then when it's like drains you, you gotta drain you really hard. So I think it's usually better just to get some rest and tell the people that before, so they don't expect like getting in the studio 9 o'clock in the morning and they expect to nail 3 drum tracks in one day, you know. It's like
in like an hour.
Exactly. It's like you just tell them like, we won't probably not record anything today, so you know it's just gonna be about,
and that will just I can already imagine it. Most people are just like, oh thank god. Yeah, but it is tough. And like when you kind of started, how long have you actually been recording and mixing for, like official? I don't know if I've ever asked you actually.
I started like in a studio. I did my first internship when I was 16.
Wow.
And they hired me by like an hour rate, like when they needed me. So
yeah, like a freelance type situation.
Yeah. So I did that till I was like 19, 20. And then I studied for a year. And after that, it's been full time. But in the beginning, like the first 8 or 9 years there, I did like 50-50 front of house. So did a lot of touring.
Live stuff as well, yeah.
Yeah.
Were you working in other people's studios for a lot of that time as well, early on?
It was only, I got my first studio in 2008.
Oh shit, okay. So quite a long
time
ago.
Before that, I was just freelancing. Just,
yeah.
Rented different studios.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm assuming it's there is a massive benefit to having your own studio.
Yeah.
Apart from the cost, I guess. That's not a benefit.
But I think it's also the only way these days to afford doing full productions. Because if you want to rent another studio and me, it's going to be so much more expensive. Here, it's almost like you get the studio for free. That's like,
yeah, that is true. And I guess that in itself, hopefully, that kind of keeps you in work in a lot of ways, because people that don't have their own studios and have to, as you say, you're kind of doubling your cost before you even leave your house.
Yeah.
By bringing a producer and renting a space, and you know, and because you've got so much gear there as well, the amount of people that probably have to rent gear as well on top, or
that's the thing.
That's true.
Even if, like, a lot of times I also want to leave for another studio or another country or whatever to record an album for a month or up to 3 months, something like that. But in the end, when you start calculating the cost of everything, like hotels or studio costs, renting stuff, and here I know all my gear, so it's pretty quick, you know. And I would say there's a lot of nice studios, but most of them maybe have a great collection of like studio gear or microphones, but they don't have the amps or the cabs, I know, or in the guitars, the drums, you know. So you need to rent all of that stuff and
figure it out and
exactly
see how it works in the room and all that stuff. Yeah,
but I like it a lot, but it just, I think it's so much more expensive most of the time. The only thing I could do it a little bit cheaper is if someone else is renting my studio.
So
that covered the cost for the studio, but otherwise it's usually expensive. So
I guess it also helps your I guess it helps the kind of relaxed, homely vibe as well, because it is essentially your home. So,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So like, you're bringing people into an area that you're relaxed in, you know really well. If anything goes wrong, you know what to do.
Yeah.
Whereas I guess the minute you take yourself out of that situation, you know, I'm sure you'd be relaxed in most places, but there's that slight bit more tension than you would have if you're in your own place. So I can totally understand. So I guess there is a lot of benefits to having your own studio. And that room, dude, the drum room is fucking phew.
Yeah, it's nice.
That's the place of dreams.
And it's also a lot of bands, they want to come to Sweden. For like, I worked with American bands, like I told them, like, it's gonna, instead of having them, because my previous studio didn't have like anywhere for the band to stay, so you needed to rent a house or a hotel or whatever, and it's kind of expensive in Stockholm, and if you're six guys in a band, it's usually cheaper. And that studio wasn't that expensive for me, so I could close it down for a month without ruining me.
That's cool. Yeah,
so a lot of time I said, like, yeah, it's cheaper if rent a studio in America and I fly over, like one flight ticket, you know. One hotel room maybe, or
absolutely a lot easier.
So but then like 95% of the time it's like, no, we want to come to Sweden, you know, they want to explore, like Sweden is one of those metal countries.
Oh dude, summer, yeah, you know? It's, I mean, me and Bill especially, we fucking loved just spending time in Sweden, even though most of the time we spent was in the same place, in the studio and around the studio area and all the bars in the area. But yeah, man, there's just a vibe in Sweden. It's very to us anyway, it's very chilled, it seems very relaxed, and people seem to just kind of stay out your way, which is quite nice.
doesn't seem to be
a huge amount of dramas. Not from the outside, I'm sure there is when you live there, but from the outside visiting, it's a very calm vibe generally, which is nice.
Yeah, I agree.
And I guess that makes sense for American bands wanting to come over to get away from the chaos.
I would say, but, to me, the only the only downside with Sweden is the weather, I guess. At least for me.
Oh, speaking of, what's it like now? Is it snowing? Is it?
And
is
now
it
it's
cold?
Just really windy, like snowstorm windy and cold.
Oh shit!
Yeah.
Oh, because I mean, see, because I've got my little fan heater on, it's blowing at me. Yeah. Cause it's, I say it's cold, but it's, I mean, compared to you, it's probably not cold at all. I think it's like one or 2 degrees. I think maybe a bit more, but there's no wind at all.
Yeah, the wind is the worst, I think, here when it's probably just -4 or something like that, but it feels so cold when it's windy.
With the wind as well, yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ. But yeah, sorry. So I was going to say, when you first started, you know, being a kind of full-time producer and engineer, did you have those nerves? Like, were you kind of having to kind of calm your own nerves and try and calm the nerves of other people, or was it relatively early on you kind of were relaxed and relatively confident?
It's so hard to tell. I'm still not relaxed, I think. Like,
really, dude, I would never get that impression.
Yeah, it's probably usually in the beginning if you do something different. Like for me, I was of course nervous doing Carcass because I, you know, it's an iconic band. And even if I believe I could do something cool with it and hopefully better than the previous album or something, like different at least.
Mm. Yeah.
It's still like something working with a band like that. You don't want to fuck it up. You know, it's...
Yeah.
So that kind of nerves, like, it's always special. Or when like John Bon Jovi was here for only
for
a day or two like
ever.
That but that's also is like a different kind of thing,
but you can't really prepare for that, right?
No. And it's and I think that's the only way to move forward is to do things that you're not comfortable doing. Like if you only do stuff like that you're super comfortable, you would never like step it up or evolve or
and things would be very boring, I guess, as well, if it was just the same thing that you were super comfortable with all the time.
And it was the same thing. I was probably 21 when I did my first European tour as front of house with Catatonia.
Yeah,
and I hadn't done any proper front of house before that. You know, I was supposed I was supposed to go on as an assistant. An assistant on that tour, and then it was with the Jens Bogren, and he, like 2 weeks before the tour started, is like, "Oh fuck, I think I need to stay at the studio, or I got a booking here, or whatever. Could you do the tour yourself?" It was like a 6 week European tour. Like, I was 21. Shit. I have never met the guys and everything, so I just stepped on a bus in Stockholm and just said hi to the guys, and we spent 6 weeks on the road. Like,
wow.
My first show was, of course, they were not as big as they are now, but it was still, like, for me, it was still proper venues, you know. It's
of course.
So it's of course you're nervous about the first shows, but then you get into it, and I don't know, there's part of me probably calms me down myself, because deep inside I know I can pull it off, maybe. That's
And I think, like, I mean, you know, that is the same as playing in a band, isn't it? It's, and in a lot of ways what you're doing is more nerve-wracking, because you're kind of in control of the entire band and how they sound.
Yeah.
So if it goes catastrophically wrong, then everyone knows about it and they know that it's your fault.
Yeah.
So that's a big weight to carry. I can totally imagine, especially with, you know, when you're young and a pretty big band on your first tour. But it's that whole thing of, again, it's the same as being a musician doing your first tour, or, you know, joining a big band or whatever. It's you kind of have to do it. It's like there's something in your brain that's like, well, I don't really have an option here. I'm in the situation. I've been asked to do it. I have to do it.
Yeah.
If I don't do it, then I'll regret it for the rest of my life.
Yeah, exactly. That's it.
So it's kind of, yeah, you just kind of, yeah, there's something, I guess it's that fight or flight moment thing where your brain's just like, It's not whether I can or can't. It's I have to.
Yeah. It's stupid I have to say no. It's like, yeah it's probably like the same thing first time you played a festival for 30,000 or whatever, going from a venue. It's insane. I'm going to play for so many people. If I fuck up, it's going to be
That's a bigger fuck up. And exactly. And that, well, there's the whole thing about being the drummer as well, that, you know, if the drummer fucks up, everyone notices. If the guitar player fucks up, no one really notices.
Yeah. It's easier to get away with. Just do a slide or whatever and you're fine.
I don't know why I chose the most pressured instrument, but I think it's like it's that classic thing, isn't it? It's you have to put yourself in those situations, and you just have to do it. And of course, there's moments when it doesn't work out, you know, or there's moments where you're not ready.
But you learn from those as well.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Yeah, I was going to say my biggest example of that was I tried out for the Black Dahlia Murder when I was 17.
All right.
And, you know, in the back of my head, I was like, I could do this. Yeah, they took me out there, which was crazy to do an audition. It was mad thinking about it. But when I got out there and I played I played the first song with them, and I was like, yeah, I haven't got this, and I didn't practice enough. I'm not good enough. Yeah, it was obvious. I was like, okay, yeah, you know, you can play the rest of the songs, but I just knew in my head, you know, you haven't got this. Yeah, and they were really nice, and they were like, oh, good try, man, and you know, whatever. But as you say, you learn from those things, and I realized I have to be a lot more prepared next time. I wasn't as prepared as I should have been.
Then you were that cocky guitar player that thinks you could nail all the solos in one day. You know?
exactly. I guess that's when you're young, right? You think you're invincible.
Yeah.
And then you have experiences and you realize, oh shit, I kind of suck. But yeah. and it's those experiences that make you reevaluate and be like, oh shit, okay, what do I need to do to be better? And I guess, dude, the studio is one of the biggest places for that. And I guess you probably see people going through those kind of experiences all the time, just being like, why can't I play this fill? Or, you know, and I bet you're thinking, because you're not good enough to play this fill. You need to make the fill a little bit more simple.
I think that's very common when you're younger, like trying overplay. Like, do you say that? Overplay? Or
overplaying. Yeah, absolutely.
It's just, to me, it's especially drums, it's of course all about a groove, and if you're doing the most complicated fills or beats or whatever, if it's not grooving, it's not gonna make the song better, or it's just gonna destroy the song. So making it simple, people are, it's too much to prove, and hopefully
especially in metal music, I think
but hopefully when you get a bit older and more experienced, you think more about the song, which the important stuff. You don't have so much to prove anymore, I think. Hopefully. Absolutely. It's probably not that in every case, but
I'm sure some people get worse and they're like, well, no, I'm getting better, so I need to show people that I'm getting better.
Yeah.
But speaking of, like, you know, I guess preparing for stuff, like, did you prepare for Torn Arteries any differently? Well, we didn't know it was going to be called Torn Arteries then, but did you prepare for the Carcass album any differently than you would a previous album? Like, do you normally do any, like, research before you do a band, or do you generally normally know the bands that you do production for, or is it a mixture?
It's a little bit of a mixture, of course. There's bands I've never heard of, or maybe I heard of but never listened to. So of course I check out the latest albums or the most popular album, or I listen through to see what I think it's good about the band.
Yeah, try, like, and find something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is where they shine, and this is what I want to bring more of. And and also, if I can, I always prefer to see the band live.
Interesting.
To see how they sound live and the energy and, you know, all of those things, because it's very easy to lose that in the studio. Like, you get too much perfection or whatever, and, like, actually, this is how the band sounded live. the feeling they gave me on stage, it's something I want to hear now as well, or feel. So it's good to have that in the back of your head. And of course, if you can meet and have a dinner with the people.
So just to get to know the personalities and who's the leader. Who's
It's better to know that before the first tracking day, you know. Most of the cases, you don't have that luxury. So it's just a band coming in.
With Carcass, we met each other and we'd actually worked together, which was great. I thought that was such a good start because we kind of knew, already we knew that we worked well.
Exactly.
I thought we worked well together and it was cool. And did you have any kind of, had you met Bill and Jeff before? Did you know much about them? Like, was there any preconceptions?
I never met them and didn't know them as persons. Of course, I've seen Carcass live before. Maybe last time was like Hellfest or something like that.
Okay.
But yeah, long time ago.
Yeah.
But still, I've seen them live and not with you. It was...
The Swedish guy.
Swedish guy, yeah.
two
Swedish
good.
Guys. Yeah.
Legend.
So I hadn't seen like the constellation that you brought to the studio, but still, of course, I knew about the band. And so, by preparing, I listened a little bit to the previous album. I felt like this is not what I want to do. This is not my style.
That's exactly what we didn't want, was that album again. So. So that was kind of perfect.
Because that's always a little bit scary when you listen to a previous album and it's so far from maybe my sound or my approach or everything. And then you're always a little bit worried, like, do the band expect me to sound like the previous album? Or are they looking for something different? And hopefully, in that case, they're looking for something different. But I remember it was the same thing when I did the first Whitechapel. I'd only mixed it, but when they sent the first album to mix, it's like, and I listened to the previous albums, it's like so far from my mix approach. Or
I hope you don't want me to copy this, because I can't.
Yeah, exactly.
Or I don't want to.
Yeah, exactly. It's... But so that was always like a little bit worried before you send the first mix. Is this going to be completely in the opposite world for what they're looking for? Because my approach is almost always just I do my thing, what I believe and feel about it. And then the band can come back with their feedback when they heard how I thought it should sound like. Yeah. Or... Because I think that's easier. If I listen too much to other stuff and try to copy it, I lose myself pretty quick. So I've never really done that. Like, I don't even listen to like a reference track until I'm done with... Like, now I feel like I have a good first mix. Now I listen to a reference track to see if I'm missing something. Or
yeah, it must be so easy to get, as you said, lost in... trying to do something different than what you actually want to do, because that's so easy to do as a musician, and I'm in exactly the same way. I'm sure it's really easy to do, especially when there's so much music now and there's so much that people are forcing in your face and telling you sounds good, that I mean, we've all got different opinions of what sound good, but there's, you know, it must be hard, man, like, you know, just constantly. Or as you say, like a band's previous album sounds, maybe should we say too processed or whatever, and just being like, fuck, what do I do here? Because that's not what I do.
Yeah,
must be really weird.
And I also think it's, I don't know if it's because I'm not good enough, but trying to copy other, I felt pretty early on like, I can't copy, I can't make my stuff sound, even if I love it, I can't make it sound like this, because it's not me, it's not my ears. Or so to me, listening and like analyzing like what is he doing here exactly and try to copy that. Some people are good at doing that, but that's not me. I think it's, and also if you want to create your own sound, or it's better trusting your own stuff. And then of course you can pick up stuff like, I really like this production. Why do I like this production? But for me, it's always been more about feel than technical. Like, he's always using this type of reverb or delay. It's not that important to me. It's the vibe I get from listening to the music. It's the important stuff.
Yeah, and that's something I've noticed about you as well. And that's I find that's something that's quite rare in modern metal anyway, is that most of your productions sound different. You know, like, not wildly different, but, you know, they fit the band. Whereas there's a lot of, as we have talked about before, there are, again, we won't name names, there are people out there who have a sound, and if you like that sound, you go to them. You know, it's like, because if you go to them, that's all you're going to get. You're going to get that sound.
Yeah.
And that's cool, like, if you want that sound. But, yeah, I really love the fact that all of your productions sound different. You know, they suit the band for different reasons in different ways. And that's, I guess you can only really get that by kind of trying to do the best for the band and trying to remove your ego as best you can.
And also, like, working as a team, letting the band be in and decide as well. So it's not like, now we're going to have my guitar sound or whatever. It's going to be something created together.
Well, I used this for the last 15 albums. So.
Yeah, exactly. And with this guitar player, doesn't fit because they play different. You know, it's getting the best of each band, and it's also more interesting, both for myself and the listener. I think it's keeping it fresh. If I were more like a factory, both mixing and just doing the same all the time, I would get bored. I would probably do something else.
Yeah. Well, it loses its creativity then, because it's still such a creative thing, you know, mixing and producing and even engineering. You have to be creative in lots of ways, and I don't think people give it enough credit sometimes for how creative it is and how creative it can be. Again, unless you're just doing that kind of factory stock
sound. Yeah.
Again, no, I'm not gonna name any names, but but I did a session once where it was amazing. It was just, I did a couple of tracks for this band in the UK, and went in the studio, and the producer was, I brought like a couple of snares, and I had a, this band was kind of like, it needed like a fat kind of low tuned snare, so I had like a 14x8 snare that I've still got actually, and so it had like a brass thing that was really, it had a lot of like, you know, like a lot of whap to it. It wasn't really high cranked or anything, and it's kind of just what the band needed. I felt it, and then like the guitar player was super happy with it, and the bass player was like, yeah, fuck, those snares sound fucking amazing. And the producer just came in and he was like, yeah, your snares sound good, but I've used this snare on the last 6 albums that I've done, and it always gets great results. and we were just like, oh, okay, but you know, these sound cool though, don't they? And he was like, yeah, but you know, this is the one I use, and you know, it, like, people always say it sounds great, so let's just use this one. And obviously I was like, yeah, fine, whatever. This isn't my band. I don't give a shit. But it was just amazing that the guy, the fact that he said, I've used it on like the last 6 records. So I was like, do you not want to just try something different? But I guess there's a lot of comfort in that, right? There's a lot of comfort in, I know this works. I don't have to deviate from it. And therefore...
And I like to experiment, but of course there's some stuff that's been probably the same for 10 years for me, like some things you do. But I always, for every recording I do, I want to change up and try different stuff. The only bad thing is I don't remember what I did. Like if I had like a spreadsheet of all of this, I would probably be able to find a perfect sound for an album. Or it's like, I tried this, and it's like, it was cool. And then when I'm mixing, it's like, oh, I did choose this snare. I prefer the previous song snare. Should have been on this one as well. You know, it
should have been on all the songs.
Yeah. It's like, why did I do that? And then I forget it all about it till the next album.
And then you do the same mistake again. Well, I guess, see, this guy using the same snare for every album, he doesn't have that problem.
Yeah.
He knows exactly what sound he's going to get every time.
But I think that's also, if you try stuff, it's, you got to be things that are not as good or it could have been better. But again, you learn from those as well. And then, and you find those really cool stuff. Like, it was recent, I recorded an album and it was a snare I never used. It's been here. I had it for a while, but I never choose another snare before it. But then it turned out with that drummer, it's one of the best snare sounds I ever got. So it's,
wow.
And he was more like a punk drummer than metal drummer. You know, it's more hitting with his whole arm, or maybe less technique and more energy and
less fancy.
Yeah, exactly. More less technical, but it's also that, like, every drum or guitar or guitar sound or whatever sound, it's needs to fit the person performing.
Yeah, totally. And I remember when I was playing for Heaven Shall Burn, Mike, the guitar player from Heaven Shall Burn, used to say, like, I've spent most of my career trying to get the guitar sound off of Heartwork, but I realized that guitar sound is in Bill's fingers.
Yeah.
He was like, you know, you can use the same amp, you can use the same guitar, you can, but it's never going to sound the same. And it's 100% the same with drummers, like maybe even more so with drummers, because the way that a drummer hits, the way a drummer articulates phrasing, just everything, the way they, you know, they like to tune or whatever. And like, because I feel like, because you've recorded with Bard, obviously, right?
Yeah.
And he's an absolute machine, and just, I know he's crazy, but in the best way.
Yeah.
But I feel like he has a sound, like he's got a thing, not just his playing, but like the way he tunes his kit and everything. Like it's when I hear, like, if I'm scrolling through Instagram or whatever, if I'm not looking, I just know it's him, even if it's just like a phone microphone or something. Yeah. It's not properly mic'd. Like, drummers just have, and guitar players too, but if, you know, if you're a really, I guess, confident drummer, like, the way you play is such a big part of your sound.
Yeah.
Like, and how you tune yourself and how you play and how you set things up and what sounds you choose to use and all that kind of stuff. And
for sure.
I guess trying to capture that is, I guess that can be really hard sometimes, right?
Well, and it's, I would say it's probably less and less these days that, like, I would still, now he's older, bored. But the first album, he felt like he was a tiny kid when we.
Yeah.
I remember if maybe it was 6 years ago I did the first album with him. And so, for being that young, I think it's very unique to have such a sound. Like, I think that's a little bit boring these days. Like, there's so many guitar players that sound the same, and even metal drummers as well. It's like they're amazing, but when I hear them playing, it's like I can't tell.
Don't know who that is.
No, it could be
anyone.
Any of these 10 amazing drummers.
Absolutely.
And I think maybe, like, in the 70s or whatever, it was more, you had your sound and style, and you were more. Yeah, you had the personality behind the instrument.
Yeah, and I guess that kind of comes back to what you were saying about mixing too. Like, I think there are a lot of people that it could, you know, you hear a mix and it could be any one of 10 people.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and it's, but, and you know, you wonder if, again, it's still, I find, especially that from the drumming side of things, these highly technical drummers that sound quite similar. Again, I'm not going to name any names, but they're, absolute respect for the kind of obviously the discipline that it's taken and all that kind of stuff, but there's definitely, yeah, you kind of want someone to just inject a bit of their own, you know, this is amazing and all, but what about you? Like, I don't know anything about you still. Like, you can play this perfectly and it's flawless,
yeah,
but it could be anyone.
Yeah.
Like, what are you about? What's your thing? And I get, yeah, it translates with a mix as well, like, as we've just discussed.
And I'm not sure why really, but I think, like, programming drums for songwriting is a big part of it, I would say. Like, you try to copy that, or like Easy Drummer or whatever drum software you're using. It's back in the day, before computers and everything, you rehearsed together and you played together.
You came up with ideas in the same space. Yeah.
Now it's usually like one is songwriter, and then the drummer is, of course, doing his own thing with that, but it's a lot of just beating the drum machine or like
being... absolutely. And I've talked about this before with other drummers on the podcast, even just like when you get sent a song with programmed drums, because you learn it with those programmed drums, it's almost impossible to get that version out of your head.
Yeah.
So even when you're trying to write your own stuff, in the back of your mind, you're just like, oh yeah, this bit, it has to go like this.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's so hard to just break out of that, because you learn it, you know, with these programmed. And yeah, that's such a good point. I hadn't really even clocked that.
I think people are kind of
competing with drum machines, aren't they?
Yeah, and I think it's a little bit the same with guitars. Like, guitar sounds a lot of its plugins and stuff. Like,
you can
have a preset. For me, I could have the same cab, the whole signal chain with microphones and amps, everything exactly the same, but I'm never going to be able to get the same guitar sound again with a plugin.
You can just store
that preset.
Actually get exactly the same thing. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And for a guitar player, like for Billy, I think he's one of those guitar players that has so much sound in his fingers. There's, of course, every musician has... it's in the fingers or hands or body or whatever. But he's so much, like, there's no one in the whole world I can come up with that sounds like him. Like, not even close, you know.
It's true.
It was recently, like, the other week, it was a guy who I'm going to record. He's doing, like, a comeback album. He's been a manager and lawyer and all that.
Oh, wow.
Stuff for a while, and now he's gonna do, with the pandemic, he wrote a lot of songs again, so it's like, let's do an album. And he bought a guitar, and he asked me about the pickups. He has those custom pickups from from his friend, or
Monty's. Yeah, I think they're called,
And he asked me, like, are those good? And I said, because it was a Les Paul, I think, as well, so... And I said, yeah, they're amazing, but I don't know how they sound under someone else's hands. You know,
it's... for anyone else outside of Bill. Yeah.
It sounds amazing with Bill and Bill's guitars, but so I can't really tell you. You know, it's probably an amazing pickup, but it's not gonna sound like Bill. If you get it, it's gonna be a good pickup.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's like obviously I feel incredibly lucky, but. It's in a lot of ways it's negative, because because I've played with Bill now for almost 11 years. He's like, to me, he's like the standard. Yeah. So if I'm around a guitar player, I'll just be like, oh, he's not very good. And then I have to remind myself, oh no, hang on. He's actually really good. Bill's just
different
on another planet.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not that he's, you know, it's not that this person is worse or bad. It's just different. Like, so it's negative for me. I'm just like, shit. Yeah, I'm very lucky that I've been able to play with this guy who's this good for so long.
And he's so unique in his playing, I think, as well. Like, timing wise, is probably one of the
phrasing and stuff.
Yeah, one of the few guitar players that it's like a little bit behind the beat instead of always pushing.
And that
was
a whole learning curve.
Yeah,
for me as well, like, because I went straight from Aborted, Heaven Shall Burn, super rigid death metal,
click track to,
I was going to ask you about that as well. Like, it's amazing how many people still don't know that Carcass still doesn't record to click and never has done.
Yeah,
they all assume that Surgical Steel was to click. Everyone assumes that Torn Arteries was done to click, and which I guess is a nice thing for me. means I'm not that terrible with timing, which is quite nice, I guess. But but still, like, because obviously, before we started recording, we kind of told you that it wasn't going to be with that click. Did you have any worries about that? Any preconceptions? Were you like, fuck, no? Because you know the standard these days.
Yeah.
Everybody records to click, and you have to have a scratch track, and you have to blah, blah, blah. You know, was there any worry from your end on that side of things? The
no, for me it's more refreshing and just more fun.
Yeah,
because it could go either way, you know.
Yeah, it could be a car crash.
Yeah, yeah. But as long as you play together in the same room, it's. I think people are obsessing about click. Of course, it depends on what kind of music you're doing. But if you're off from the grid or whatever, as long as you're off together and it sounds good, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like, no one is going to see a screen with grid lines when they listen to the music, exactly. You know? So
exactly.
And you win so much with having the freedom, not playing to a click track, I think. But of course, you have to be up to a standard as a musician as well. Like, you don't want to be rushing or slowing down, like, in the middle of a part.
Every
like,
2 bars.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, yeah, I know, yeah.
You have to have a steady beat. And it mostly comes down to rehearsing, I think. If you... If you don't rehearse and you want to enter the studio and record without a click track and you haven't played together that much, I would say it's a bad idea. But if you rehearse without a click track and you have the feeling, like the tempo in your body and everything, like locking in with each other as with guitars, in this case, guitars and drums, because we tracked, rough guitar and drums together.
Yeah, with Bill in the room. Yeah,
yeah.
Old school.
So, in that case, it's just more fun. It's more to me. It's less control, which I think is also a little bit.
Can be a bit scary.
It's scary, but it's also like refreshing and fun, and you don't know exactly what's gonna happen and.
Yeah, some like the good old days.
Yeah, but it also that's where you find the really cool stuff, like things you wouldn't find with a click track when everything is steady and I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely find as well. Like, I don't know if you notice it from drummers, but I notice this when I play to click. Is I play to the click, and. I never listen to the guitars. So even if I've got a scratch track or something and the click track, all I'm listening to is the click track. And I'm just like, don't move from the click, don't move from the click, don't move from the click. You know, in the back of my mind, I'm still kind of listening to the guitar. But, you know, whereas without the click and being with Bill, having that experience, all you've got is the guitar. So your only choice is to be as locked in as you humanly can with the actual music as opposed to the click. So it's a wildly different experience, and I assume it must give a different result, because just being in it and playing it feels completely different, because I'm just like, right, okay, Bill's sped up a bit. Bill's usually slowed down because he always tries and pulls it back. I'm the one who speeds up. But... You know, so I'm constantly like, oh, okay, that's playing that a bit too fast. Oh, and then a bit faster. And then, you know, so you're constantly adjusting yourself, but with a guitar as opposed to with a click, where you're like, oh, shit, no, I'm too fast. Oh, I'm too slow. Oh, no, I'm too fast. And I feel like doing it with an instrument is so much more natural and so much more musical than...
Yeah.
It has to, you know, it has to breed some kind of, as you say, some kind of... freedom, I guess, some musical freedom. And it is, I guess it is a shame that people don't do it more, and I guess it's just the way the world's going. But I do feel like there's a bit of a, especially in the underground, there's more of a movement away from that stuff, and it's just, I guess, mainstream stuff is always going to need to be perfect, because that's just what mainstream is, right?
But it
needs to be sellable.
And still, I think I would say 95% of the drummers sound better without a click track.
Really?
Even if the tempo is not steady. Yeah, like always when you're like, all right, practice this part, and then you practice it. It's like, now it's really groovy. And you turn, let's record it. And
you put the click on.
With the click on. It's like, now it's stiff again. Now you can hear, like, of course, when you're really good and you like a session drummer, you don't listen to the click that way. You have it in the back of your head, and
it's just a reference almost.
Of course, there's good drummers that can groove with a click, but even with Eloy from Sepultura, like parts where you turn off the click, just let him be the guide and play where he feels it.
He should has to go.
So I think it comes to every drummer. It's like click track is, I don't know. It's a little bit like editing too much. Maybe that it's like a safety thing. Like, you know, if it's a click track, at least it's gonna be able to get it tight or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Do you think that's where it comes from? Is it so that it's easier to edit, or do you think it's
in metal? Everyone wants it to be so tight, but I'm not sure if it's, because a lot of time I hear like probably people that like super quantized stuff still enjoys like a carcass without click track, and that is a little bit looser and rougher, but maybe they don't realize that. They're just a little bit scary. Like, it's a little bit like the first time you edit drums. It's easy to quantize them because you can just look at the screen and you know now they're tight, so they had to be good.
Yeah.
Instead of listening and make them be groovy. So I think it's a combination. Of course, it depends on the music. Some stuff is locked in with sequencers, you know.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think there's definitely times when it's super rigid stuff is called for. As well, you know, there's certain styles of, not even metal, there's certain styles of music that, you know, they sound right when they're gridded and they're super. But yeah, I feel like when you're making really aggressive, dynamic music, there should be some dynamics and aggression in there.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think most of, like, I'm not sure if what you would call it, but normal metal today, it's like turned in
whatever that is.
Yeah, whatever. It's so hard to like, but yeah, exactly. What is metal like? I see it as American metal. I'm not sure why, but
yeah, I think I know what you mean. Yeah,
it's hard to.
Yeah, because I mean, it's so fractured now, isn't it? Metal is so fractured.
Maybe modern metal. It's maybe a better name.
Yeah.
And to me, it's
because there's bands from everywhere that have a similar sound.
Yeah. But it's, to me, it's almost turned into like EDM. Like,
There's
like quantized, the guitar sound is sounding more like a synthesizer than a guitar.
Yeah, it's really, really back in the mix a lot of the time.
And like, there's like one kick and one snare sample, or like, it's more treated like electronic music and like everything. And it's, I'm not saying it's bad, like I understand, like but it's not, I don't getting like the feel of it. Like, it can sound impressive or anything, and I can hear it's a very good mix and it's a good mixer, it's done by very talented people, but it always, for me, it always comes down that it's after a while, like one song could be 30 seconds, I'm bored. Like, yeah, I know exactly how the whole album's going to sound from just hearing this. And it's not going to be anything like pointing
surprises.
Out. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I know what you mean.
And to me, it's more interesting to listen to the album where you don't know what's going to happen. And one song can sound like shit, but it was cool. And then the next one sounds cool. You know, it's...
Yeah.
It's... I don't know. It's overall, that I think that's more... like a better experience listening through, at least if you listen through an album, but maybe a lot of people listen to singles or like one track here and there now.
It's well, I think, you know, the what's the word? The landscape of listening to music has totally changed in our lifetime, isn't it? You know, from when we were kids to now, it's wildly different.
Yeah.
It's just, can't even compare it. You wouldn't have been able to, if you told yourself at, you know, 10 years old, by the way, when you're 40, everyone's going to listen to music on a laptop or through phone speakers, and they can listen to any music that was ever released at at any time with the press of a button, you'd be like, fuck off.
Yeah, exactly.
so it's, yeah, so, and I guess you can't discount that people just listen to music differently now and they want different things from it, I guess. I mean, again, I don't know, but all the stuff that's popular seems to tick those boxes.
Yeah. But I think in that regard, I think we're a little bit blessed that we are in the metal or hard rock or rock world.
Yeah.
Because people still want albums or the concept.
Yeah.
Pop world is like albums kind of disappeared.
It's not even almost a thing,
no,
right?
it's just it's a single. It's why going to the studio and do an album. It's like,
yeah.
So,
and I guess these days as well, like there's no need to even go into a studio for a pop record because nothing is recorded live apart from vocals. Well, even then, it's probably just, you know, auto-tuned.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, all you need is a laptop and a microphone. So there's no need for studios. There's no need for, you know, like big productions. There's no need for and so I was talking about this with a friend recently that in the 70s and even the 90s, 70s and 80s especially, even the pop music had unbelievable musicians on.
Yeah.
You know, like the most popular songs in the world, when you listen to them now, you're like, oh my God, listen to that bass line. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
It's like some insane bass player playing, and it's, you know, it's the cheesiest song you've ever heard. But whereas now everything is completely computers. And again, you just can't deny that that's changed everything. It's changed the whole landscape, not just for pop music, but for metal and for it all filters down, doesn't it, into everything else.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you notice that in the studio, do people want more and more kind of fake sounding things, or generally do people come to you because you are more of a natural sounding producer?
I think that's people more coming here for that, like I'm doing it more organic and I don't know, more real. Or like if you ever recorded or just stand like next to a drum kit and you listen to albums today, they are so far off from how their instrument sounds, like
how an actual drum kit sounds.
Yeah, whatever microphone you put on a snare, it's never ever gonna sound like that. Even you know, I boost like so much high end, and then recording it, and I do it again in a mix, and like I still need more. Yeah. You know, it's like it's so far off from how the instrument actually sounds.
That's the thing, man. Like I see it, like even I'm sure you've seen it. Even on Instagram, you see so many drummers, and this is just Instagram. It's, you know, and they've got full studio setups, and you know for a fact that they've sample replaced. They're just doing 30-second videos on Instagram.
Yeah.
But they've sample replaced or highly processed their entire drum kit, probably highly edited as well, for a 30-second video.
Yeah.
So, and you just think, you can't escape it. It's everywhere. Like, it, even just a 30-second freaking video on your phone, it's sound replaced, it's quantized, and it's edited and processed. And you're like, well, if that's the standard now, like kids growing up now, that's going to be the standard. And then when they hear an acoustic snare drum, they're going to be, what the fuck?
Exactly.
Like shit.
That's the sound like.
What is this? Yeah. This isn't a snare drum. It's what a snare drum sounds like.
It's the fake world we're living in now.
Yeah. It's quite scary, isn't it? It's really scary. But what do you think it is? I'll try not to make it too long a question. But what do you think it is about drums that intrigues producers so much? Because you love drums.
Yeah.
You love snare drums, and you know so much about drummers, and almost all the producers I know, producers, engineers that I know, are the same, like totally nerdy about, like they know as much about drums as I do, you know, like about the different shells and what they sound like, and like, you know, different brands of cymbals and blah 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 blah.
Still they sample and replace everything,
and anyway. And still they sample replace everything. Exactly.
So why?
So it's all bullshit. But what do you think it is about drums that kind of grabs the attention of producers and engineers? I mean, I assume guitars are still very interesting. But it feels like there's a whole thing around drums that producers and engineers just really seem to kind of get drawn towards.
Yeah, I think it's many different things. Like,
yeah,
to me, it's like groove, like tempo stuff. It's so important for me in music. Like, if I had to pick, I would pick rhythm over tonality, or for sure over lyrics. You know, it's so important to me to get the feel, like moving, like your body moving more than just like with notes and stuff. You get a different, you get moved more inside. It's so hard to describe.
But
one thing make you listen and get an emotion inside. The other one makes you dance. It's maybe
And
to me, that's very important. The whole feel of the rhythm. And also another part, I think it's the most difficult to record. So you need
the drums.
Yeah, because it's so many different instruments in one instrument, you know,
in one, and there's so many frequencies, right? One instrument, essentially. You've got all the frequency ranges in one in one instrument.
So it's and so many microphones to pick it up. You don't have to, but in metal, to make it that process sounding, you need a lot of microphones to be able to catch it and process it that hard. So it's challenging that way with so many microphones, with phase, and it's just the hardest to record, I would say. And it's also so important in the mix. And just the snare sound can change so much.
Well, the whole anger.
Yeah, but yeah, the whole vibe. mean... That's an extreme one, but but if you record a song with like a low tune snare and then you do it with a piccolo, for example, it's gonna change so much of the vibe of the whole song.
The whole vibe is so, yeah, that's true.
So without being a distorted guitar, for people that not into guitars, or they're gonna hear it as a distorted guitar, to be honest, you know.
That's, they're not gonna be like, oh, listen to the some crisp high end on that.
But if you change the snare to a really high pitch and a low pitch one, every listener is gonna pick up and notice that, like,
yeah,
it's gonna totally change the sound of the song. So the drums are so important in that way as well.
And I guess they're always the first thing, mostly, most of the time. Not so much anymore. I've heard a lot of bands that don't do that. But most of the time, it's the first instrument you record in a session. So I guess it's set you up for the rest of the music.
And you work around it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's scary. I've never done it the other way around. My preferred way is to do it like more like we did with Carcass. Like you have a... You play together in the room, and so you have a reference all the time with a guitar. And but I've never done it, which a lot of bands do today. Like you have the program, the drums, while they tracking the guitars, so they can change kick pattern all the time when they're playing the guitars and record everything. And then the very last, they record the drums.
That's really surprising.
And it's so, to me, it, like, for example, I know Whitechapel did it on the last two albums, and it turned out great. They had great drummers, but to me, it's very strange. I prefer doing better, like, pre-productions and demos or whatever, and then start with drums and doing the layers, because it's for me, again, timing is so important. If you want to quantize everything, I think it's less important.
It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's, then you can move the guitars after the new drums again, you know. But it's going to be an editing mess. And I usually want to get the groove first down. And then I stay at that groove, and the guitar player or bass player, whatever, has to follow that. That's
yeah. It makes sense, doesn't it? That again, to me, again, maybe I'm just getting old. Old now, yeah. old man. But yeah, it makes sense that the as you've said, the drummer makes the tempo, makes the groove, makes the kind of the blueprint of the track, and then everything else is built on top of that. That it makes sense, but. Yeah, I guess, again, if you've got... well, I know for a fact Whitechapel had Alex Rudinger and Naveen Copperwise, who are unbelievably tight. So, yeah. You know, there's probably not a huge amount of difference between them and program drums. anyway, so... especially if, you know, they're playing exactly what was programmed, which a lot of drummers do.
And I get the part that you're more creative and you have the freedom to change the drum pattern while you track guitars, like... But I also see that it's of course there's been times where I wish like my dream scenario would be to have everything mic'd up in the studio, the whole process. Like, oh fuck, let's change when we start tracking guitars. Like, the drum part should be a little bit different here. Let's go back in and record.
Let's just do it again. Yeah, with everything set up as it would be finally.
Yeah, yeah. And do it like song per song, like track drums for one song, then we do bass, guitars, vocals. So always,
and then you've got a complete song.
Yeah, and then you move on to the next.
Yeah,
and then you might change sounds and everything, and because that way, that was would be the best way to me for me to do it. Because of course, when you do drums first, and then later on, it's like, fuck, why did you play the crash in this part? You know, it's always going to be those like spots like, I wish I did this or, but again, it's like, this is what we have to work around. So let's make it fit. Maybe you need to change the guitar riff a little bit now, or maybe you need to play softer because you play the hi-hat here instead of the crash. Or so it's always like sculpting around. You always start with the foundation and whatever the foundation is, for me, it's usually drums.
Yeah.
And then you work around it. It's the same when you do rhythm guitars. You have set that sound, and everything affects everything in a mix or in a production.
Yeah, like, everything affects everything else.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
So when you do the lead guitars, you need to make a lead guitar tone that fits with what you already tracked, which is probably the bass, rhythm guitars, and drums.
And drums.
So it's everything is... tweaking it around what you have already done. Like, that's why it's so hard to a lot of people where they do with plugins and they change everything all the time. For me, it's more like, this is what I have. The next sound I'm going to do needs to fit in what I already had. If I can change if I then go back and change the bass sound, it's going to fuck up my guitar tone and it's going to fuck up the lead or the vocals.
I guess in that way, it's already hard enough to know when something's finished. But if you've just got unlimited options all the time,
yeah,
how do you ever know when anything is truly finished?
Yeah.
at least if you have, you know, some kind of box, it's like, well, it has to be done to fit in with this.
Some parts that could be like music by accident, or it could be creative, like this didn't work as we thought, so now we need to come up with another solution, and it turned out to be a better solution, you know.
That's true.
So I think instead of searching for the
perfect thing, which may not exist,
by
coming up with something that wasn't perfect, you actually came up with something that was more interesting.
but it also comes down to being a little bit open-minded, like when you go to the studios, like if you have a demo and it's going to be exactly like that, it's kind of boring to produce an album like that. I prefer like having pretty rough demos, and then you create the production in the studio
around from my memory, ours were relatively rough. Were they quite rough? I don't really remember the demos.
It's pretty much you and Bill did. He did a double his guitar
a
and did some leads
guitar
maybe
demo thing but it was quite basic, wasn't it? Quite rudimentary. And the difference, but I swear there was quite a lot of drum changes that we did in the studio as well. I remember like changed drum parts and especially drum fills and like maybe one day we'll release the demos and just could see the difference between one to the other. But it's But that's the whole process, I feel, and it's so exciting. Just kind of going into the studio. Again, you have to go with someone you trust, I think. And I guess you have to work with people you trust as well.
Yeah, yeah.
That aren't just gonna, you know, just string it out for, well, it took us a year, but still it wasn't a year straight. But yeah, and just kind of going with it, and if you have a crazy idea, just give it a go. You know, like all the utensils, kitchen utensils.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we did it with a plate as well. I think I took an oven plate from...
Oh, that's right.
From right. home.
And slammed it on the floor. Yeah, yeah. yeah.
The other one, yeah, was whatever you put the silverware in when you dry
yeah,
it.
Yeah, like a, I guess cutlery. Like a metal cup. I don't know what you call
exactly.
it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Like aluminum. Yeah. Yeah, that's a little bit of the smaller sound. We did so much fun progress.
Yeah, and that, but there's stuff like if it's hard to pick out everything that's there.
Because
we added so many layers that people just will never know about, but it adds so much to the kind of size of the and that's one of the comments I've had a lot from a lot of people is like, this album just sounds so much bigger than the last one. Like, it just sounds huge, and I think it's all that stuff, isn't it? It's the little bits in the background that you don't consciously notice, but they're adding to this kind of bigger
and
picture.
And if you take them away, you will notice.
Yeah, yeah, you'll notice them, absolutely. And
you probably feel them more as a vibe or whatever, more than you actually hear them. Like,
yeah,
some stuff.
And people will never know that it took like 4 hours.
Yeah.
to get them. Really? That tiny thing I don't even notice? Yeah, yeah, that took like half a day to get that. Just that 5 seconds of... See, this is why people don't do this shit anymore, because it just takes too long.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, oh, we'll just program in a cowbell. We'll be fine.
But I also think, like, to be honest, I think it's why it moved more to it. It's with you have a smaller budget these days.
So yeah, that's true. We were lucky that we didn't have a time limit, really. And probably a bigger budget than a lot of bands as well.
So that's makes it possible to do it the old school way or the studio way. And of course, there's bands that even if they had the biggest budgets, they didn't want to go to a real studio. You still want to be in the bedroom or whatever using guitar plugins because that's the sound of that style. But I think there's a lot of bands that if they had bigger budgets, they would want to do the whole album in the studio, like even back in the days definitely. When you did all the writing in the studio, you know.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that's a whole nother level.
Yeah, exactly. Lock the studio for a year just for writing the album.
That's insane, isn't it? Yeah, I don't know if I was gonna say I don't know if that'll ever come back, but maybe it still happens.
But
that's for some big artists.
I think it's for like the Savage Messiah. We actually wrote.
That's true, yeah.
That's the first.
And then recorded in the same week.
Yeah.
Is that what we did?
We wrote the songs in 3 days and recorded them in 2. And then we changed drummer the other week.
I always remember that because they hadn't told you that I wasn't doing the whole session.
Yeah.
So like, I remember
I'm leaving on Friday. It's like, because my plan was to write the first week and record the second. And then it's like, Wednesday is like, I leave on Friday. It's like, all right, let's change your plans.
Wait, what? I remember being just on the kit with the headphones on and you just talking through the talkback going, I've just been made aware that you're not going to be here for the rest of the time. I was like, oh no, you didn't know that. I could just see on your face like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah, it was...
And they didn't. Luckily, Ali is incredible.
Yeah, yeah. So, it was very cool. Well,
yeah, man. A very, very different drummer in terms of power to me.
Yeah, yeah. We had to.
He is unbelievably hard hitting, that guy.
And that was. That's very, like, obvious when you change drummer like that, because you played the same kit, same kind of setup. Of course, you moved things around a little bit, but. And still, it was sounding so different. So we had to think we changed heads completely for him, different heads and completely different tuning, because you have so different approach of playing
styles,
the drums.
Styles, yeah, absolutely.
So that says a lot about the instrument, that you had to adapt it to the musician. Again,
absolutely, that, and I guess that was, I don't know if you'd ever had that experience before, but that's I guess that's the ultimate test of, like, you can literally give the same drummer exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And it sounds completely, or sorry, you can give two drummers exactly the same setup, and it
sounds so different. Yeah.
Completely different. Yeah.
And it could be,
because it was, and it could it be the same, wasn't it? Same, very, he had my cymbals, he had he had the same snare, had exactly the same everything.
And two very good drummers and very good drums, but it sounded amazing with you. But when he stepped in, because it was set up for you, it didn't sound good. So we had to change
that's
everything.
So weird.
Yeah, so I had to change everything to make it sound good for him as well, you know.
And I guess this is what you were saying about everything you do affects the next thing in the mix, right?
Yeah.
It's a similar thing. Like, you set the kit up and tune it in a certain way and how it EQ, blah, 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 to fit me, firstly. And then when he comes in, it's, oh, hang on, none of that works for him.
Yeah.
So let's just scrap all that.
Let's do a new sound check and start over. Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it?
It's a little bit the same, or very much the same with guitars. Like, you start setting the sound with one guitar player doing the rhythms, and then there comes another part in the song, or the next song is going to be played by the other guitar player in the band. It's like, it sounds like shit. Like, and it's not like he needs to be a worse guitar player. He just had different styles.
Different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we need to change
it, or whatever. Yeah.
Picking technique or whatever. One plays harder. It's so many small things that matters. So you have to do the best sound for each person. So.
God. I mean, and see, it does sound exhausting. I mean, I get it why people use presets and plugins. Because, God, yeah.
It's cheaper, but faster, easier.
Exactly. Doesn't require so much discipline or work ethic.
Yeah. But no one remembers lazy people, right?
That is true. That is true. Yeah, they always seem to disappear. Probably for the best.
Yeah.
But as a kind of, I don't know if you can answer it, but as kind of advice to drummers who want to record, as a, you know, as a well-established producer, what do you look for in a good drummer? Like, because obviously this is a drumming podcast, so if we can give some advice before we end.
Before entering the studio, I of course, practicing. But it comes like different ways. You should practice, but at the same time be open-minded to change things. So don't practice your drums fills to be exactly how you thought it you wanted. If a producer tells you, or it could be a band member, when they hear it in the studio, it's like, that fill doesn't really work for my song, if it's the songwriter in the band, or can you try something different there? And there's a lot of people that practice too much the same stuff. They just freeze them. It's just, even if they probably have 50 other drum fills they could do, it's like, no, I can't do that now.
This is the one I've practiced.
Yeah, exactly. It fucks up everything. Then it takes them what probably would take them 1 minute normally. It's like, you just get a mental block or whatever.
Yeah, like a wipe.
So I think practice a lot, but still be open-minded and maybe practice different drum fills or whatever. And then you can have, of course, one in mind, but be a little bit open-minded when it comes to drumming overall in the studio. Because for me, example, I change a lot, like, don't play that hi-hat. Maybe you should play the ride or that crash. Or I want to change probably a lot of stuff, because if most of the drummers these days have only practiced the drums by themselves, to like demo pre-production.
Not in a practice room with the rest of
the
band. Normally.
So it's hard to actually know how it's gonna sound. And even if it's a simple way, like two microphones or four microphones, I would say you should record yourself and listen back to it.
Mm.
That's very important for any musician, I think. It's to learn, like, and listen back and what's not working here, what should I change? So it's not the first time you hear your drums back through speakers. Mm. It's in the studio for the first time. It's like, it could be stressful if you notice stuff is not working as you thought that late in the process. It's better to...
It felt great. It felt like I nailed that.
Yeah. So I think that's important. And also study the music a lot. So you know what you're playing works well together with the music. Not only think about coming up with the coolest drum.
Craziest thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's like try different things and go for the one that benefits the music the most, not your ego, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is, I think, is one of the toughest ones.
Yeah.
To kind of to get your head around.
Especially in like prog music, or which I do a lot. It's like all about showing off and not stepping back.
Yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, that's the most important things I would say. And maybe I'm not that, like, probably my approach would be for any musician, it's in the rehearsal room, make it as hard for yourself as possible. Don't make it easy. Don't tune your snare super high pitch, and don't make anything like easy. Like, it's the same for guitar play. Like, turn the distortion down so much that it feels awkward, but it makes you play better. So then later on, it's going to be easier in the studio, maybe.
Yeah.
Instead of the...
Yeah, that's really good.
The opposite. It's like that high pitch snare is very common because it's easy to play fast and...
Absolutely, yeah. Especially blast beats.
Yeah, exactly. And then when you come in the studio, it's like, I want that snare down.
That sounds like shit, that super crank snare.
Yeah, exactly. I want it down a lot. And it's like, I can't play it now. It's like...
The big one as well, especially for fast metal drummers, is kick drums. Because a high-tuned, massively stuffed kick drum sounds like shit.
Yeah.
And you need it pretty much empty with like a tiny little bit and quite loose.
Yeah.
Like almost, almost nothing. Almost no tension, really, sometimes. So getting used to that in a studio, I remember that the first time that I wasn't just triggering a kick drum. I was like, hang on, what? This is like playing a fucking pillow.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. But yeah, that's really good advice. I can't remember who it was, but one of the big session drummers, he was saying that when he was younger, he used to practice like, he'd practice on like the cheap, he'd buy a super cheap, crappy kit. And he'd make his practice room, like he'd get like 5 fan heaters and he'd make it unbelievably hot.
Yeah.
And he'd play on this like crap, horrible kit that sounded like shit. And he said, like, if you can pull off a good take, and he'd record himself and just, if you can pull off a good take in that kind of situation, then you go into a nice studio, you're going to be absolutely fine.
Yeah, exactly. That's...
I can't remember who it was, but it was someone like Josh Fries or one of those. Like, but it's a really good point. Like, you're going to be uncomfortable in the studio because it's probably not going to be your kit. You're going to be nervous. It's not going to be your drum room. It's probably not going to sound perfect in your ears like you have it in your practice room or whatever.
I mean, it happens a lot here. Like, you hear them start setting up. It's like, I want that that snare an octave down and the kick's 2 octaves down. It's like, can you still play it? You know, it's like, it's you see the...
Really? Like, are you sure that's going to sound
good?
Yeah,
exactly. Maybe we need to do the songs in half tempo or half time.
I guess that's the thing as well with because I guess not all the time, but triggered bass drums is such a big thing. But if you want to get a mic sound as well, like that, those two just aren't compatible, really, are they? Like,
no,
it's quite hard to,
that's
to have a trigger and also a good acoustic sounding bass drum.
And I think that's to me a little bit the opposite. I understand when you play super fast that it's easier to hear to make yourself accurate, like
with the
kick patterns and everything, of course. But I recorded a few drummers that comes in with, you know, they have triggers in the pedals or they have a module and everything. And they have like one sample kind of only. It doesn't matter if you touch this kick or if you play it the hardest you can, it's still exactly the same.
It's the same thing, yeah.
And if you then record with room mics and want a real kick drum, you lose all the dynamics. Like, if you do like hard stabs or whatever, some kicks are super hard, some are like super weak.
Yeah.
Because you as a drummer, you only hear that super powerful kick all the time.
Yeah. So it doesn't matter what you're doing with dynamics with your feet.
And to me, that it's drums, probably the most dynamic instrument you can play. Yeah. And you take that completely away. And also, there's another issue I had. It's that maybe it's not a big issue if you not want to mix it with real drums or the real kick. It's that there's a delay in any module that makes it from analog to digital. So,
oh, I see. Yeah.
So it makes you play, or the drummer, that he plays the real kick a little bit earlier, because he hears it later. So it's not lining up like crashes or stuff. It's flaming a little bit all the time.
That's interesting. So the mic signal is never synced up with the trigger signal.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's a delay.
And I guess, as you said, naturally in that, actually physically playing it, they're playing it earlier.
Yeah, exactly. Because they hear it. Wow. What they hear is lining up with the kick, like the cymbal and the trigger signal is going to line up, but it makes him play the kick a little bit early, because he hears it later with the trigger.
Because that's what they've got used to because of the... Yeah, wow. God.
So that's...
I hadn't even thought about that.
So it's almost like if you're used to that, it's like don't even record a real kick.
Yeah, almost, you know, but if you've only ever really played with triggers.
Yeah. So, but I never, that's not my style. Even if it's fast music, I think if you need triggers, you're playing too fast, to be honest.
Yeah. It's not your bag anyway.
Yeah. I play like, I would say my limit where I think it still sounds good with good drummers, it's like 240.
Yeah.
Over that, that's not sound.
Yeah, but that's where you get kind of silly music.
Yeah, it's like, it's not harder.
Not gonna lie, I do like some of that stuff, but yeah. Right, I do have, if you don't mind, one last thing, and then I'll let you go to bed.
Sure.
So, I do this thing, I don't know if you've listened to any of the other episodes that I've ever done of this funny little podcast that I do.
I had the intention, but...
So, at the end of all the episodes, I do this thing where I ask a whole bunch of questions. It's just a either or thing. So you just have to say which one is your favorite of these things. So I'll say, do you prefer this one or this one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Wow, that was easy.
But to be honest, coffee in the morning and tea in the evening.
Yeah, you drink tea at night, right?
Yeah.
Are you telling me? Yeah. Do you have like caffeinated tea as well? Is it like normal tea, like breakfast tea?
Yeah.
Black tea?
Yeah. Bill brought me a lot.
You can sleep fine?
Yeah, I can drink coffee and sleep. It's...
Wow, dude. Respect.
If you sleep not that much, you can sleep anywhere all the time.
Yeah, that's true. That's totally true.
Working late and having kids, yeah.
I was going to say, and you don't have windows in the studio. So, you know, your kind of sleep rhythm is just like, whenever I can get it. Yeah. Cool. Summer or winter?
Summer, 100%.
Yeah, 100%, really? Yeah. Oh, man.
I like snowboarding and stuff, but I can go a week, a year, or 2 weeks for ice skating. And well, ice skating you can do indoors all year round.
We did it here. There's one just down the road over Christmas. We went and it never snows in England. Okay, so summer, fair enough. Morning or evening?
Evening, 100% as well.
Really? You're not a morning person?
No, far from it.
What time does your daughter wake up?
Pretty late.
Is she an early riser?
Yeah, like extremely rarely before 7:30, but could be 8.
Wow. So it's, that is fucking great.
And I'm usually jealous. In bed until I take her to daycare. It's like chilling in the bed.
Wow. So it's, oh. What time does she get to daycare?
9. Like,
wow.
So I'm very blessed with that stuff. It's,
yeah, dude. Our youngest wakes up, if not before, the latest he wakes up is about 5:45.
Fuck. That's,
yeah. Every fucking day. Whether it's Saturday, Sunday, whether it's Christmas,
I would kill myself.
It's fucking brutal, man. So, but now we just bring him into the bed, and he just like watches one of our phones, and we just fall, back to sleep. When he was a baby, obviously we couldn't do that, but now he's old enough, we're just like, right, get into bed, just sit on the phone, and then we'll sleep for another 40 minutes. Probably bad parenting, but oh well.
Yeah, same here. It's like, you want to watch it now? Turn on the TV and I'm just gonna rest a little bit more. It's like, not the daddy of the year, but
fall asleep for like another hour and a half. Oh fuck! Oh shit! Is it real? Oh shit! It can't be the time. cool. Right. So evening. Yeah, I respect that. So beach, countryside, or city?
Wow, that's harder.
It used to be just beach or countryside, but Dirk said that he was a city guy. So I added in city. And that makes it even harder.
During the pandemic, I lived I wouldn't say countryside, it's like 40-30 minutes from the center of Stockholm, but it's in the archipelago. It's like, it's in the woods, but still close. So I lived there for a year in a house during the pandemic. And then I moved back to the city where I live, and you see both benefits. Like, I like having close to like restaurants and great, you can pick up great food. It's everything is available all the time, and I'm not the best planner. Like, I get, I'm not like 5 minutes ago, I'm not hungry. 5 minutes later, I'm super hungry. I need something to eat now. It's like
right now.
Yeah. And if you're in the countryside, it's like you need to plan to have stuff in the fridge and freeze.
Or you got
to
drive like 30 minutes to a supermarket. Yeah.
So I'm a little bit both. I really like the woods and the forest, like the quiet, and it's just like meditation for me being out in the woods. And probably I don't like so much crowded stuff. Like, at the same time, I hate like city environment without people. I think that's very depressive.
Like kind of wasteland.
Yeah, if you look out or if you drive around, it's like, I haven't seen a people in this whole village or city. It's
And
I also love the beach, but so it's
a tough one, man.
Yeah, I grew up at the beach in Spain since my dad is.
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah, of course.
He grew up like 20 meters from the beach, so I have a little bit of everything. But now I would probably pick the countryside when I'm older.
We get getting old now.
Yeah.
Have a rocking chair.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and also like, since my hobby is like motorcycles and motocross, it's very hard to do here in Stockholm. It's like, if I lived somewhere else where I could have my own track in the backyard, I would be
that
my dream,
sick, man. So, and the Porsche too. The Porsche just parked up.
So yeah, I would probably be in all three.
Countryside,
like if I had to pick. Otherwise, I'm
all three.
All three, yeah.
Maybe I'll let you have all three. Just this once. Just this once. No, that makes sense. Yeah, definitely the older you get, the more you want to be away from people. And definitely over the last couple of years, I've realized
And I
don't want to be around loads of people.
And for me, it's a little bit the other way around. Like when I'm in the city, I get more lazy and stay home more. When I stayed at the house, it's like I wake up in the morning, I want to go out, do stuff around the house, or just go for a walk in the woods, or take my camera, do some like nature pictures, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So I feel like
it's more inspiring, obviously.
Yeah.
Being in the, gives you more energy.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing like waking up on a nice day and, you know, seeing fields or.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we just live in like a housing, there's just houses everywhere. But, you know, when we go on holiday and we always stay in the middle of the countryside, and when you wake up and the sun comes up and there's just a nice green field and trees, you're just like, fuck yeah.
Yeah. You can hear the birds and
stuff. Exactly. You don't hear, fuck off. Which is what we hear most of the time. Yeah, man. I totally respect that. Right. I think I know the answer to this one, but Coke or Pepsi?
Coke. Zero.
Do you like Pepsi?
No, Coke Zero.
Oh, okay, good. Oh, I thought you were going to say, but Pepsi's good too. Sorry, but Pepsi is not good. No. Yeah. All the way, baby. Yeah. cool. Chips or chocolate?
Chocolate.
Yeah. I knew you're a sweet tooth guy too, aren't you? Yeah, dude. Fuck yeah. YouTube or Netflix?
Eden bought some chocolate for...
Oh, has that got almonds in?
Yeah.
That almonds or hazelnuts?
Hazelnut.
Oh, nice. Nutty one. Yeah. YouTube or Netflix?
Netflix.
Okay. Yeah. Anything you're watching right now that's good?
No, watching a show called Undercover. It's probably Dirk knows what it is, because it's from Belgium, I think. It's like a little bit of mix from the Netherlands, Belgium. It's a little bit of
the Benelux region.
Yeah. But I've noticed it's a little bit hard because you need to watch the subtitles all the time when you don't understand the language at all.
It's actually in Dutch, is it?
Yeah. Or like, I don't know what it is.
Flemish,
maybe. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of a mix of those languages. If you look away from the screen like 1 second, you just miss everything. It's like, I don't know, what did he say, you know?
Who's this guy now?
Exactly. What happened? It's like, so that's hard. Like even watching the show is like, I can watch my food at the same time.
I just need to really quickly cut the food. I don't know if this will be a hard one. Recording or mixing? So tracking or mixing? If you had to choose, if you could only do one for the rest of your life.
Probably mixing then, because it's getting older. It's easier with life.
Yeah,
because you can work shorter days if you want.
Anywhere as well, I guess, if you got a good pair of speakers.
Yeah, exactly. It's easier that way. And I still always mix here in the studio, but a lot of people these days mix with a laptop and headphones.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
But and technology.
But I think, I would pick mixing, but I think tracking is more fun because it's more creative. And
I guess you're with people and feeding off of energy and all that kind of stuff too.
Mixing is just always on your own and
sat in a room by yourself.
And it's a little bit boring to me, like you mix one album for maybe 2 weeks and then next Monday you start the next album. If you do that the all year round, I would think I would get tired of it pretty totally. Soon
that because my wife's been working from home most of the time these days. And it's all Zoom stuff. And she said earlier today, she's just on the computer all day. And she was like, humans are just not meant to sit in front of a screen all day, are they? Yeah. I just feel like shit. She's like, I've done nothing apart from look at a screen and I feel terrible. And it's true. I think mixing all the time for weeks would be the same, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It'd just be like, I haven't seen daylight in 2 weeks.
Like, and I think you lose, like, being creative, I think. That's why I think people that mainly mix, that a lot of their stuff sounds the same.
Yeah, like, yeah. That makes sense. You kind of lose reference.
Unless you're up, like, the very high-end mixers, or when they get really good productions from very good producers, because that's gonna be where you, like, it's during the recording and
from.
Yeah, exactly. And during the recording and the production part is where you actually set the sound for the album. Mixing is more like a balancing and making it polish what you already have, you know.
Hopefully not a turd.
Yeah.
As they say. Okay, cool. So mixing, you reckon?
Yeah.
Okay, a couple more. This is going on forever. I do apologize.
It's fine. It's better than watching Netflix. So.
That's true. Yeah. The Dutch program.
Yeah.
We were just talking about. Can't miss those subtitles. So, I know you're into your bikes. I don't know if this is a stupid question. But speed bike or touring bike? I'm guessing you're just like a fucking racer guy, right? You don't want to sit on a Harley and tour around.
I would go for speed bike, yeah.
Yeah, so like a racer, racing bike.
Go for on the track. It's where I think like a street bike is the most fun. Touring, I would probably prefer being in a nice car. Because it's more convenient.
Yeah, exactly. And if the weather changes, you know, you haven't got a roof.
Yeah. And it's very, like, going on the highway, I think it's extremely boring with a bike.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So.
Probably get quite uncomfortable as well.
Yeah. Sure. And I would say touring would be more if I did it, like, on gravel roads, like in the forest or.
Yeah.
Or maybe in South America, like. More an adventure stuff, yeah.
That makes sense. This is always a polarizing one. I ask everyone this. Slayer or Metallica?
Slayer, I would say.
Yes! I mean, no offense to Metallica. They're obviously amazing.
Yeah. But I never... When I grew up, I was not a Metallica fan at all. It's like, I appreciate them way more... Now, I would say, like, when I got older than when I was a teenager, I was not into Metallica at all.
Wow, but you're into Slayer.
Yeah.
Yeah, Slayer's the best. Slayer forever. okay, nerdy one. Wood snare or metal snare?
Metal snare.
I mean, you really? Across the board, would you say?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say... Unless I did, like, maybe country or, like, poppier, like, for metal.
Something needs to be a bit warmer and fatter.
Yeah, or if I want, like, a real dry sound, like having a kit in a small booth or something, I would probably go for wood. But I prefer having a lot of snare in the room mics when you have a good room.
Yeah.
And metal snares tend to sound more... out in the room, they are like louder, or they project
more
sound out in the room. That's why I prefer most of the time like maple shells as well, because I want the shells, all the shells. And usually, being in metal, if I'm a metal guy, I'm not really a metal guy, maybe, but I prefer like a little bit darker cymbals and loud shells to balance everything.
Yeah. Yeah, and pangy snares.
Yeah, loud snares.
Love metal snares.
But actually, we recorded the Carcass albums a lot with a wood snare.
Yeah, that weird one.
The 15x8.
15x8. There's one, I can't remember what song it was, but there's a blast beat. Oh, what's the song? I can't remember the song, but there's one... One of the songs we recorded with it had a blast beat, right? Oh, it's that. I can't remember the name of the song. Fucking hell, I should know this. Anyway, you know the song I mean.
Yeah.
And right at the end, it does the you know, like the blast beat with the stabs, and the Bill does his that thing. I remember that being, speaking of learning how to blast on low tune snares, I remember my left hand was like, oh my God. Because it was really low tuned as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It, like really fat and like, boah, really fat and beefy. But that was incredibly hard to do a blast beat on.
Exactly.
It sounded good.
So. Yeah. That's why you, and really it was good. The first time you played two kicks as well, right?
Yeah, yeah. First time I'd ever recorded with two kicks.
Yeah.
And yeah, I almost never play with two kicks generally. Yeah. So, and funnily enough, that's the last question.
All right.
Two kick drums or a double pedal? What do you think is better?
That one is also hard because
there's benefits to both, I'm sure.
The only downside with two kicks, it's that it's hard to get them even in the room mics a lot of times. Like,
because they're on different sides.
Exactly. Yeah. You always have this. Yeah. The snares get very centered, which is nice. But then always your right foot kick is so much in the right room microphones.
Yeah.
You know,
because it's 90% of the stuff you do is just the right kick.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yeah,
so it gets uneven in the room mics, which I don't like that much. But other than that, it's better in every way, I think.
I guess you get a better stereo image when it is
double,
when you are using both kick drums. Yeah.
So if it's a lot of double kick drums, it's cool. But it's more like when if it comes like a softer part or like a slower part where everything, you have to make it work in the room mics.
Mm.
So that's usually why I have a couple different pair of room mics. So one
to try and pick up
a little bit more
possibilities.
Yeah, so you have more centered ones and more stereo wide ones and things like that. But otherwise, it's better both. I think it sounds a little bit more natural, like playing fast double kicks. It's if they're a little bit different in pitch and sound, it's easier to hear, make them like fat and loud in the mix, but still not sound like a triggered kick. Like it's the same sound,
absolutely.
You know, it's gets a little bit more dynamic and moving a little bit more. And I think
you get a lot more separation, I guess.
Yeah.
As well. Naturally, because of it's two separate drums.
Yes,
they'll never be tuned perfectly the same. Like that's impossible.
Yeah, exactly. And also, it gets the kick to breathe a little bit more between the hits.
Yeah, absolutely, in between hits.
Yeah. And it's for
and then the stereo image, as you said as well. So that's another part of it because it's going from side to side as opposed to just being in the same the same place. So there's separation all across the board. Well, I guess.
And also, it's edit, like if you want to edit, it's way easier to edit really fast.
That's true.
If you have them
that's
on separate true, tracks, you know.
You can separate them. Yeah,
yeah,
that's true.
So you have double the length between every hit, so it's easier to move them around without
shift it. Yeah,
yeah.
People knowing.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's true. So yeah. I thought there would be a lot more benefits to double pedal, but that makes a lot of sense. I guess the main issue is the tuning and the room mics.
Yeah. And it also depends like how much, if it's a double kick band or if it's like
a few bits here.
Yeah,
then
it's probably easier to just go for a double pedal. But
just a few little embellishments here and there. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that makes sense. I just think because like, I really noticed, because the big thing that I noticed from going recording with two was that my feet were a lot less even than I thought they were.
Yeah.
Like, because playing with a double pedal, I think naturally, you because the left pedal is always weaker because you've got the link
bar. Exactly, yeah.
And it's off center. So to get the same amount of power, you're kind of, you're essentially kind of going for it a little bit harder with your left without even realizing, unconsciously. And I noticed that when there was two kicks, my left foot was always louder than my right.
But
like,
I think
especially
if I remember correctly, it's the same with Dirk when I recorded him.
Really?
I think he was...
He did two kicks, right? I'm pretty sure.
Because I remember that he was also stronger, like in his left foot.
Yeah. And it's... I mean, again, initially I was like, what the fuck? Yeah, I spend 90% of my time playing with my right foot.
Yeah.
Why is my left foot hitting harder? But again, the way I kind of thought about it was, you know, your left foot is compensating for the fact that, yeah, and also the fact that you have so much, well, most people who play with their right or whatever their dominant foot is, you have so much more control over that foot. So you can control the dynamics a lot better. So whereas I found with the left, because, you know, it only really plays when it needs to play.
Yeah.
It's only kind of got one level. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's either like kind of soft because I'm playing fast, or hard because I'm playing slow.
It's always as hard as you can play, depending on the tempo.
Yeah. Whereas your right foot has got, you know, a multitude of dynamics depending on the situation. So then when you give the left foot its whole own drum, it's like, oh shit, I've got all this space, but I can only play one dynamic, which is as hard as I can at varying tempos. So I think that's something to do with it as well. But I was like, oh shit, yeah, I can actively control the dynamics on my right foot.
But do you ever...
Whereas on my left, I'm just hoping for the best.
But do you ever practice like playing beats with your left instead of your right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, not as much as I should, but yeah, definitely. And it's, I think when it's isolated, it's a lot easier to be conscious of the dynamics. But when it is, you know, like a section or a, you know, like a kind of a rhythm, your brain is kind of just like, hit as hard as you can, hit as hard as you can. And I think because, you know, the control I have on my right is kind of unconscious, because, you know, you just use it so much. It's just an unconscious thing, that whereas the left one is obviously not unconscious at all. It's just, it's very conscious. Yeah. so it's so much harder to control.
It makes sense.
That's interesting that Dirk had the same thing, because he's, you know, he's unbelievably incredibly good. So I'm glad that it happens to those guys too. those really amazing guys.
And it is one of those very, very professional drummer. Like, he's very comfortable in the studio, knows, like, he's very easy to work with in the studio, I would say.
Mm.
Yeah, like a good session drummer. Or...
Yeah, he's done a lot as well, hasn't he?
Yeah.
He's done a lot of studio stuff.
But he knows very well, I think, what he's good at and what he's not good at. He knows his limitations, and like, if I ask him, can you play like this? No, I'm not good at that, so no, we don't need to even try it, you know. It's he's very aware of his body and muscles, you know,
and what he can and can't
play.
Which, as we discussed earlier, is really important as well. And I don't know if I'd said, but one thing I'd learned that I had to learn how to do quite quickly was, when if the producer and the band say it's good, then it's good. Like, because you can so easily get into your own head and be like,
for
that
sure
fucking sucks, let's do it again five more times, no, let's do five more, and then it gets worse and worse and worse and worse, and then you hear it get worse and worse, and you spiral and spiral and spiral. So you have to learn how to just take a step back and be like, right, if everyone else is telling me it's fine,
but
then just leave it.
But I think I prefer that approach as a musician, that instead of the other way around, that you have to like convince them to do another take. Like, they do one take, it's like, oh, that was a great take, I don't want to do anymore. Like, let's move on to the next time. It's like, it was not that good, let's do a couple more, I think we can get better out of you, you know. It's
going back to the confidence and the ego thing.
Yeah, you can do it better, I'm sure.
That was perfect.
So it's better to, it shows that you're like interested in what you're doing, and like, you want to be good.
Yeah, of course.
That you bother, actually. So it's...
Yeah.
I prefer that, and then you can be like, as a producer, you can be the handbrake. It's like, no, we have it now. It's fine. Let's move on.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's, yeah, that's what I definitely had to learn, because there's so many things that maybe even the producer won't hear, or especially the rest of the band, that you hear in your own playing, and you're like, ah, fuck, ah, yeah. Oh, that was awful, ah, that was awful. And that you just think, if I do it two more times, I'll get it. And then you just, you know, they're just the worst two takes you've ever done.
And I would say, yeah, that's bored is the most intense in that way. Like,
really?
It's in another level. Like, you worry about the hi-hat hit. Like, I didn't hit it exactly right there. It's like, no one would hear this. It's like, even now, if you solo the drums, you don't hear it. It's like, ah. And he also...
No, but I can hear it.
And he has to have the context. That's, you know, working with this, you learn a procedure, like doing vocal takes or a drum fill. I can just listen to two beats and pick the best, I think. And then I listen back later to the whole part and feel,
yeah,
but every decision you make, if you want to hear that one hi-hat hit in the third verse, you want to hear from the second chorus, like, oh, I need to hear the context. Like, all right, listen for 2 minutes and then that hi-hat didn't make sense, like, let's pick another one.
So you're not just listening back to the part, you're listening back to the whole song for that one part. Yeah.
So it didn't make sense.
Like, I mean, that's dedication, though.
Yeah, 100%. And I think,
but wow,
that's with Lepers, which is like his baby, or as a drummer, yeah, for him.
And again, you know, I guess this is where, as a producer, you have to kind of do your best to work around that.
Yeah, and
you know,
for this last album with the, like, where we track this half of the drums, like songs, half of the songs first, and then we worked on those, and then we did another session with the half of the other songs, like split it up, and we just gave him the time to do whatever. I think he got like a week for each. So in total, we probably had 2 weeks for the drums.
Wow.
Over the whole album, it's probably like 15 songs or something like that.
Wow.
But yeah, it's like he's one of those, it doesn't matter how many times you say it, no one gonna care, or like if it's not right for him, you're gonna complain for the rest of his life, like you're gonna think about like, so it's like, all right, let him have this time, and we make him happy, and then
with some people you just can't tell them it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. We have him for a week, and then he can go back to partying, and we have another couple many other weeks we can do the rest, you know.
But yeah, again, and that's, I guess,
but I love him. He's a very amazing drummer and a funny person.
The reason, yeah, I mean, I've never met him, but from what you've told me and from what I've seen, he seems like he's fun. But I assume he's quite a unique case. Most drummers are kind of, well, I don't know if there's such a thing as most drummers, but I assume that you're a bit more in control of when it's done. Like, yeah, we're good, let's move on.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Mm.
Usually I do comping, you know, like I do a couple of takes with a drummer and then I put the best together, kind of.
Yeah.
And just make notes where along the tracking, so you know what, like, maybe we need more takes in this part, we don't really got that yet. Or
I don't envy you though sometimes having to deal with,
so we got to musicians. All of this from double kick or single kick or
oh crap, yeah, oh my god, yeah, see, it's so easy to just go off on a tangent and you end up somewhere you never expected to be. But that's everything, man. And it's been really good fun. Yeah. I feel like we probably should stop, even though I could keep talking.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for thank you for taking out lots of hours of your day.
That's fun. For sure.
But keep safe out there.
Yeah.
And And yeah, we'll chat again soon.
Take care. Bye.
Take it easy, man. Bye. Speak soon. Bye.